Blog Talk Radio.
From the Boomer and the Babe studio at the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's time for Exploring Faith with John Mayer and Pete Peters. Join them as they explore the role of faith in today's world. How does it play a role in business, politics, lifestyles, families, and individuals? Now here are John Mayer and Pete Peters with today's guest.
Yes, that's right. This is Exploring Faith with the Boomer the Babe Show. And John Mayer is my co-host today. And how about that, John? We got the right intro music for the first time in the last three shows now.
Yeah, it's a sign of things to come, whatever they may be.
Whatever they may be. That is Wednesday. It's February 1st, and we're on our way into the middle of the first quarter already. It's hard to believe. It's in 2012, of course, and we're broadcasting from the studios of Feeding Arizona Complex in Youngtown, which is also the home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. I'm Pete Peters. My co-host is John Mayer. We have a special guest today, and we're going to get into that shortly. I just want to remind everybody that the Boomer the Babe Incorporated is involved in many things other than this radio show. In addition to the show, we do ebooks and mini books. Our ebook authors have their own shows on the Boomer the Babe Network here on Blog Talk. We invite you to listen to those people as well. We produce videos, promotional products, and consult for small businesses. We are truly a multifaceted, multimedia marketing company. And I can catch my breath. John,
yeah.
We have a gentleman in the studio that you know probably quite well.
Yes, yes, that's right.
And he is a musician, and he also happens to be your son.
That's correct.
And we're really glad to have him. I'm glad you grabbed some of his time as he was passing through Phoenix, I guess.
Yeah.
And so why don't you introduce your son, and we'll see what this show has in store. Maybe even some guitar music and some singing.
That's right. That's right. Well, my son, John, is here. He's from a long line of John Francis Mayers, going back quite a bit. And John is a singer-songwriter. He lives in Nashville. He's got a recording with Dual Tone. It's his fourth CD. Among the many other things that distinguish his career is he has won two national awards from ASCAP. In 2006, he was the ASCAP Lyricist of the Year. And then in, 2010, wrote a song, which he may do later today, which was ASCAP's most socially conscious lyrics for that year. And was at the big national ASCAP awards dinner in New York for both of those times. The last time was with Tony Bennett. He was the only guy, other guy there, wasn't he?
There was a lot of guys there.
There was a lot of guys, but Tony Bennett was there. I mean, who else counts, right?
That's
Tony
right.
Tony and John Francis.
Put the two of them together.
yeah. So John is here to talk a bit about his work, his writing, his performing, some a bit of how his faith has opened up some things in those areas for him and what that means. So, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Dad.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Pete.
Right, we're glad to have you here. Well, let me ask you a couple of questions, if you don't mind, John.
Go for
because
it.
Because I don't know the background, and you do. How long have you been interested in music, and when did that start? Did it start because your dad's also a musician, and did it start in the church? How did it start?
Yeah, both. Sure, it's always been there. It's always been kind of central to my experience growing up, and of course in church. Music was a big part of what happened on Sunday mornings and what happened in the church. And it was always around, too, at home. Music was always there. My dad plays, and I remember many nights where, you'd be sitting around playing guitar and singing songs at home.
Yeah.
Mom would sing along. And,
yeah.
you know, there's always a piano there and everything like that. So I think the importance of music was always really, really clear to me. It was always pretty front and center.
When did you first perform? Do you recall when that was? Do you know when that was? That you performed
solo in
front of a substantial group of people other than your family?
Well, I do recall being in, you know, like boys' choirs and stuff when I was really young. And I recollect having some solo performances in that scenario, you know, all that real, you know, that really high-pitched soprano boys choir stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my sort of public debut as a performer and a songwriter, maybe I was 13.
Oh,
really? 12 or 13. And it's all a little bit murky at the moment, you know, but I played in some cafes and played in local firehouses and like these little rural towns. And of course, the big show that comes to mind was at the church where my father was the pastor there. And yeah, that was a big show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was probably one of the biggest shows.
Yeah, I remember it was something like 300 people, I think, came that night. And
yeah.
Yeah.
What was the first time that you got to cash a check for your performance?
I don't know. But I am accepting checks. So.
Are you expecting a check today?
No.
Because I left my checkbook at home.
Maybe from our listeners, charitable donations. No, I don't really know the answer to that question. I guess when I was really young.
You hear the stories about the struggling singers and songwriters and performers that were singing in smoky dive bars and whatever, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would take it that you did not come through that route.
Oh, of course I did.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I I'm not through it yet.
No, it's still in
there.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's the good stuff right there. So.
That's the memories there, huh?
Well, not even memories. I mean, future plans.
Yet to materialize. In fact, we, Chris Johnson, a lot of that, but we were in Ireland together in what was that, May? May, I think, yeah. Yeah, and it was a lot of course, they're called pubs.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little higher class dive bar. It's called a pub.
Yeah, it's just in Ireland. That's where things happen.
Yeah, well, that's Irish way of life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It's funny. Like you know, in Philadelphia and in Nashville, and you know, just about any place where I tour, I tour about 200 days a year, not necessarily consecutively, but in Europe and all over the U.S. And there's been plenty of weekends where Saturday night I'm in the bar playing, and you know, singing whatever it is that I sing, my own stuff, and then the next morning I have a church gig, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To me they're equally as important, you know, they're equally as I would say they're one is no less, you know, sacred than the other. If you ask me.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Well, I'm taking away your question.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
I find it interesting when I talk to performers, musicians. We've had occasion to have a couple of them on the show before. One is a woman of color who is a Nashville, has a Nashville, acquaintances, and she has a band that she works with down there.
Who's that?
Rhonda Towns.
Rhonda Towns.
Yeah.
Exactly. Rhonda Towns. Good singer.
Very good singer.
Very good singer. How do you know Rhonda, John?
Well, after Jesse joined, Jesse Ramirez joined.
Oh, that's
Fossil
right.
Fuel,
yeah, that's right. We were over down
our
there.
Our first gig. Rhonda and Fossil Fuel played that thrift store.
That's right, where we were broadcasting.
The thrift
exactly.
store opening. Of course, the thrift store closed 3 days later.
Yeah. But, I don't think that had anything to do with the talent.
No.
Rhonda Towns, yes.
I don't think so.
Rhonda Towns is a country singer. She's very, I think, I find her to be very, very good.
She is very good, yeah.
And
a pastor's daughter, too.
She is a pastor's daughter. Right. Yes, yes, she's a... She sang in the church all of her young life.
She's black?
Yes, yes.
And she lives in Nashville.
She lives here. She lives here in Chandler.
Chandler, yeah.
But
yeah.
She travels back and forth to Nashville for some recording stuff and does some things there. And I'm trying to think of who some of her connections are. If I had the magazine that she was on the cover with me, I should have thought to bring it. But
I'd like to meet her.
Yeah, she's a neat, neat lady.
Yeah.
She's, I don't know, how old do you think Rhonda is? Do you think she's close to 40? She's certainly probably in her 30s.
Mid-30s?
Yeah, mid-30s.
Same
yeah.
as John here, same age.
Yeah, she's waiting to be that that overnight sensation that took 35 years to get to.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a long night.
It's a long night. A long
yeah.
night.
Yeah, I played a cool show the other day in Tucson that you might appreciate at... a place that is focused on advocating for immigrants crossing the desert.
Okay.
And people who are detained in, where is it, Florian?
Florence, yeah.
And Eloy?
Yep.
Yeah, so this is a benefit concert at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church, and it was raising money for a detainee. He's in Florence, I think. And he, you know, he's been in the country for a long time, seeking asylum, but he's also been detained for quite a long time,
mm-hmm.
several
mm-hmm.
years now.
Wow.
So here's to hoping that they raise the money to get him out. His name's Marco.
Okay. Well, that's something that I have some real strong feelings on, and how that happens, and. I guess I just don't have the huevos yet to do it on the radio and say what I think on the radio show.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Well, no, my point being, and I will make this point, and I probably shouldn't make it, but the heck with it, I'm going to make it anyhow. To my mind, the last time in history that we had people going around and walking up to people and saying, "Your papers, please," they were taking them to a gas chamber.
Yeah.
In Germany, and I don't like the thought of that happening here. So that's all I'm going to say on the subject. I think that's enough for me. But if you'd like to express whatever opinions you want, you go right ahead.
Yeah. I will.
Oh, yeah. I believe that is the case.
Well, I know we want to, like, we got to take care of a little bit of business as to why you're here, other than to see your family. But you're doing an event this weekend, correct?
That's right.
And what is that event?
It's here in Surprise. We're in Surprise, aren't we?
We are. Well, right. We're sitting in Youngtown. But,
Youngtown.
Yeah,
but
the event's in Surprise with the West Valley Arts Council.
Yeah, West Valley Arts Council invited me to come play. It's this Saturday,
mm-hmm.
February the 4th. The day before Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes.
I believe the show is at 3 p.m. Yep, it's at 3.
3, yeah.
Should be a beautiful day down there in the park. What's the name of the park?
Marley Park is the area, the residential area that it is. Heritage Park is the actual facility within Marley Park, where the Arts Council has its offices and shows and stuff.
I'm going to play... for about an hour or so, and it's an acoustic set, just me and my acoustic guitar. What you'll hear if you come is folk music and kind of rock and roll and country and that kind of stuff.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Of the songs that you perform and you've recorded, how many of them are your own composition?
All of them.
All of them. Okay. Now, do you do other people's stuff? I mean, do you cover?
Sometimes.
Do you do some covers?
Yeah, I do. I do a lot of covers. John Prine and, you know, of course, Bob Dylan and Johnny Cash, Springsteen and Townes Van Zandt, you know, this
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to some morning radio not that long ago as I was sitting at the computer, and they did that Bob Dylan song, Alice's Restaurant.
That's Arlo Guthrie.
I'm sorry, Arlo Guthrie's song, Alice's Restaurant. And I think I saw something on your website about Arlo Guthrie.
Yeah.
Did I not?
Yeah, you did. He's you know, he's been one of my heroes for a long time, and I got to play up at his place in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. He's got
okay.
a place called the Guthrie Center.
Uh-huh.
He's a wonderful guy, really deeply spiritual man, and I played there. And afterwards, we were talking and kind of chatting up a little bit. And then, you know, I guess you could say we're acquaintances or, you know, loosely pals or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he sent me a really beautiful email talking about how much he liked my music and my songs and, you know, lyrics and things like that. So what you saw was probably the a quote from Arlo Guthrie on my website. Of course, he's the son of the great Woody Guthrie,
right? Mm-hmm.
Who wrote some just wonderful songs. You know, speaking of which, maybe I'll sing a Woody Guthrie song. Would that be
sounds
all right?
Good? Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, would you do that now if you like?
Should I? Yeah.
Go right ahead.
Okay. This is a song called Los Gatos Canyon. It was written in the 1930s.
Wow.
And it's about one of our favorite, most pressing subjects at the moment, immigration. Sometimes a song can say what, or a story in a song can say what a lot of people can't say. Crops are rolling, the peaches are rotten, the oranges are piled by their creosotes. 600 miles to the Mexican border, they chased us like outlaws, like rustlers, like thieves. Father's own father, he waded this river. He took all the money that he made in his life. My sisters and brothers, they work on your fruit trees. And they drive your big trucks till they break down and die. Goodbye, my one. Goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mis amigos. Jesus y Maria. You don't have a name when you ride the big airplane. Oh, they will call you. We'll be deportees. Skyplane caught fire over Los Gatos Canyon. 'Twas a great ball of fire shook all our hills. Who are these dear friends who died on your topsoil? Well, the radio said they were just deportees. This the best way we can grow a good orchard? Is this the best way we can raise a good crop? Well, my sisters and brothers, they die on your topsoil, and they're known by no name except deportee. Goodbye, my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mis amigos, hey, Susie Maria. You don't have a name when you ride the big airplane. Only we'll call you, we'll be deportee. Goodbye, my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mis amigos, Jesus y Maria. You don't have a name when you ride the big airplane. All they will call you will be deportee. All they will call you will be deportee. Oh, they will call you, will be deportee.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. Where did you learn to pick the guitar like that?
I guess I just taught myself. Dad taught me a little bit, right, Dad?
Yeah.
And that's about it. Just picked it up.
And how about the voice? I mean, have you had formal voice training, or is this something that's just come to you and it's something you've been bestowed with?
Well, remember how we were talking about the church and the,
yes,
and the smoky bar?
Yes, that's it, huh?
Yeah.
This is a result of the church
from,
and
yeah,
the smoky bar.
Yeah. Training,
yeah,
ground,
yeah,
right.
Mostly just trying to get people to listen up in either setting.
There you go. That was very nice. I enjoyed,
yeah,
listening to your stuff when I was listening to it on the on your website, and
thanks,
it's really nice to hear it in person. We have this thing that Deborah and I do. She says, "What are you doing?" And I say, "You know, when I'm just sitting there messing with the computer during the day when I should be working, you know." And she said, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, I'm just sitting around waiting for it to come around again on the guitar," and that's my way of admitting that I'm just messing around here.
Messing around. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'd wait for that to come around on a guitar just about any time, just to, yeah, sit and listen to you play. That's really, really nice.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, John, there's a couple of songs that you wrote are in that same vein with Woody Guthrie. People on the Edge, of course, Who, the ASCAP winners, about that. And
right.
Some others. What motivates you to want to write and share and engage people with that?
Well, I'm interested in human beings because recently I discovered that I am one.
Wait a minute, who told you?
And so I think that's the story.
Ooh.
You know, human, our stories, my story, your story, your story.
Right.
You know, this is what really matters, isn't it? I don't know. I guess it's that spark. I guess it's that kind of, I guess it's that impulse of, you know, the human spirit. You know, the common thread that we all, you know, the thing that we all hold in common, hope and pain and struggle and joy and, you know, guilt and forgiveness, and you know, this is really, when you really boil it down, when you get right down to it, that's really all we've got.
So
why am I interested in it? I guess because everything else feels a little bit boring or empty.
Yeah.
Or surface.
What happens when you share a song like Woody Guthrie's song or some of the others that you've written, and you start, well, how does a typical audience usually engage with that?
Well, I guess it really, really all depends on the context.
Yeah.
Well, I have quite, I'd say, a varied audience. Where I think the stuff that I'm singing about and writing about, I try to sing about it and write about it in such a way. Sometimes I really have to draw a hard line and say something that falls to one side or another of a political issue, you know. But to me, that's treading dangerously on the near the edge of where art becomes propaganda,
yeah,
or something that's topical or social or psychological becomes political or soapboxy. And I'm not interested in being a soapbox singer. I'm interested in telling the truth and telling true stories. I'm interested in maybe, you know, saying the things that people, that we all think about and dream about as we're drifting off into sleep at night and don't really know how to say,
yeah,
with our waking mouths. So in that sense, because I'm not trying to be soapboxy and political, but yet social and human, and bring a narrative that people can relate to, about love and joy and, you know, our mutual journeys, I feel like my audience is quite diverse. And by diverse, I think if you were to get them talking, like in a town hall meeting, you know, after, if you got them all in a room somewhere and they all started talking, there would be a lot of polarization going on.
Right.
I remember a show that I played in our hometown, in my hometown, out in Phoenixville. And I knew for a fact, just because I knew some of the people in the audience, I knew for a fact that if we would have had a town hall meeting, it probably would have come to blows, to fisticuffs, you know. There is some retired Marines there who were pro, pro war in Afghanistan, and retired Marines that were peace activists. And there were people who, there were, radical,
yeah,
sort of anarchy kind of folks, and then total line kind of Republicans coming in, working for the local Republican campaign and this kind of stuff. And I just thought, and then of course there was a whole range in between. So I thought, that's cool. You know, maybe I'm doing my job here where,
yeah,
I can speak to them where they are. Sometimes I have people ask me, like the song that I won the socially conscious lyricist of the year award for from ASCAP. Sometimes people come up to me and they're like, "Oh, that'd be a great tea party song. Could I please use that song for the tea party?"
Yes.
I'm gonna let you guess what I say to those people. I say it very politely, but I do decline the offer. But then again, I've had people like far on the left, like Green Party people from Europe, want to use that song. So I'm hoping that I can be kind of like Johnny Cash in a way where, you know, you have your like totally punked out anarchy kids with like green hair and tattoos, skateboarding and stuff like that. They love Johnny Cash. And then you have your Southern Baptist, ultra-conservative kind of, Tea Party folk or whoever.
And they love Johnny Cash.
They love Johnny Cash.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that question, and you're answering it. I was wondering, where would you put yourself as far as what genre of music? I mean, I'm a product of the the 60s, you know. I mean, that's where I, when I grew up, I mean, I was in high school in the early to mid 60s and went on to college after that, and it was draft beer, not students, and you know, that type of thing, and
you know,
smoking dope, and you know, Haight-Ashbury and all that good stuff. I mean, the typical boomer stuff.
Yeah,
and that's how we do it. And as far as this show, there's a certain element of that on this on our show. But I also see a certain element of that, and have listened to a certain element of that in some of the songs that I heard on your website. So, I mean, can it be said, or would it be offensive to you if somebody said to you, you're a modern-day protest singer? Are you a protest singer? Like they were thought of in back in the day of Woodstock and so on and so forth.
To answer that question, I'd say I hope not.
Okay.
I hope I'm not a protest singer, because that's kind of a typecast role.
Yeah, a bit of a negative connotation.
I don't view it as negative, because there are people out there that are great protest singers.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Oakes was a great protest singer. Pete Seeger, you know. But, I mean, if you look at the life of Pete Seeger, or Woody Guthrie or Joe Hill, you know, these guys, even Buffy St. Marie, who I got to open for recently, she's written some great protest songs. But I wouldn't call her or Joan Baez or Pete Seeger or Tom Paxton or, you know, I wouldn't call them protest singers, because their catalog and their depth is, it's broader than, you know, I mean, the moment that, Buffy St. Marie wrote a love song, was the moment that she stopped being a protest singer. You know, so to really categorize that way is not really, let's boil it down. I mean, what is protesting? I mean, it's an act, isn't it? It's like, it's speaking truth to power. So hopefully I'm doing that. But hopefully I can do that with a love song, and hopefully I can do that with a level of artistry that sort of defies the stereotypical idea of a protest singer.
Would it be safe to call you a social commentator?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think every time anybody opens up their mouth and says anything about anything, it's just they're a social commentator.
I mean, as a performer, you're a social commentator. This is the nature of what you do through song, is you make social comment.
Yeah, certainly. And there's a long legacy of that. And I like what you were saying about the 1960s and even the early 70s and such like that. You know, there did seem to be more of a... I've read, anyway... And I've heard that was way back when, you know, music actually said something.
Had a message.
Yeah.
And it did have a message.
And even moreover, it was able to sway people's opinions. And it was very prophetic in that sense. Prophetic in the sense that it spoke to the times.
Well, what amazes me is that we have many similar times going on right now,
right.
And we don't have, and today's generation doesn't have the voice that our generation had, John.
Yeah.
And the voice that we had was through social commentary via lyric or whatever. We asked, Deborah asked the question. We were at the AARP convention in Las Vegas several years ago, and the guy that wrote All in the Family and I'm having a total trouble with names today, but she asked the question that, do you have to march to affect change, or can you do it through acting and writing and so on and so forth? And his comment was that you have to do both, that not one or the other will necessarily carry the day. So he's saying that when he did All in the Family with Archie Bunker and so on and so forth, that was cutting edge stuff back then.
It was. And
today
that.
It's bland. I mean, it's just nothing compared to what you see on TV. But that was social commentary, and he did it through his writings.
What a great show!
It was a great show. It still is. I mean, it still is today.
I remember when he became an Episcopalian on the show.
Oh, really? Archie did?
Yes. Yes.
I didn't remember that.
What a cultural shift for us.
For the Episcopalians or for Archie?
The Episcopalians. Yeah. I don't remember Archie shifting much. Yeah. Well, I wonder if there's a difference between what is actually a cultural reflection and what is actually the forming of culture in what you create. That was just a thought that came to my mind. We don't actually have to pursue that. Right?
Well, and I think that's why we people herald Bob Dylan so much, because he was there. He's sort of like he was a game changer.
Yeah.
You know, he was singing, Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man. And Pete Seeger was also a game changer in a big kind of way. You know, Pete Seeger writes Turn, Turn, Turn.
Yeah.
Or I guess Solomon wrote Turn, Turn, Turn in Ecclesiastes, and then Pete Seeger put it to song and made it part of the vernacular. And then when the birds got a hold of it, I would say there's the difference. That's maybe I'm trying to illustrate your point, is that when Seeger did it, he was moving culture. He was ahead of the curve. He was incarnating something, and rather he was influencing society and culture. And then when the birds did it, it was more, I would say, a reflection of what was already happening.
Right. Yeah, that's an excellent point.
You know, when Dylan wrote the song "The Times Are a Changing," wrote that record "The Times Are a Changing." And I would say even before that on his Freewheelin' record, you know, it was right around that time that he was up there, quite literally standing next to Dr. King and singing The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll and Only a Pawn in Their Game and The Times They Are Changing and Blowing in the Wind. And people ask him if he was a protest singer, you know, and he I think he would give a much, I've seen interviews where he's given a much less gracious answer than other times.
I know, right.
You know,
yes.
Where, but I mean, maybe that's the difference. Maybe a protest singer, doesn't quite have the kind of clairvoyance that someone like Dylan or Seeger did, where, I mean, they're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
You know, they're out there in the realm of, like, as the Aborigines call it, the dream time.
Right.
You know, and they're seeing what's about to happen.
Right.
And then reporting that.
Yeah.
They're forecasting.
Yeah, they're forecasting.
Whereas a protest singer is a purely protest. Is a reaction.
Yeah, it's a reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the other side of the same coin.
That's right.
And, you know,
it's after the coin fell. Right. Well. Yeah.
Well, with the remark that you made when the birds sang it.
Yeah.
Seeger did what he did, and then the birds liked it.
maybe decided that this is a time to try to make it really popular and make some money at it.
Well, yeah, and it was a huge hit.
Exactly. Huge. So, I mean, maybe there, the difference between what we're talking about here is, and it generally is with everything anymore, it's a dollar motivation.
And I was going to make that point a moment ago where we were talking about, we were kind of not exactly, we were kind of dancing around a little bit, but I really do lament the loss of relevance and meaning in popular music. And I think it exactly boils down to the profiteering of the record industry. It exactly boils down to that. And what we saw in the 80s and 90s was just a wholesale sort of selling out of artistry, more so in the 90s. And then it totally went to, you know, the outhouse in the early parts of this century, the first decade. And what you have is record executives just throwing money, pouring money into carbon copies of whatever it was that was successful last. So that's why in the 90s you had Pearl Jam and Nirvana, who were, in my opinion, great, brilliant. And then you had like 2,500 knockoffs of the same thing. And that's why you have like, you know, just this, like people, record companies just like rubber stamping these lesser copies of the original. And I'll just say it, I mean, and these days the original isn't even that good.
Well, it's amazing to me what people pay money for, A, and B, what, when you're saying the carbon copy or this rubber, the stamping out, you can see it on television. I mean, you can see the same half-hour sitcom run 5, 6, 7 times. Mm-hmm. You see all the stuff that's the reality shows, which is basically some of the same trash, just regurgitated in a different format, mm-hmm. and it's all about the almighty buck. Mm-hmm. And it's across the board, and that's part of what I think is the difficulty with getting anything done right now, politically or anything else. It's all about the money. Follow the money trail, and you're going to find out exactly who's doing what to whom, who struck John and ran, so to speak. But nonetheless, it's the money trail.
Yeah.
And you need to write a song about that. Yeah. Something to the effect of, you know, it reminds me of an old story that I heard a long time ago when the comedian Red Fox, as an old, doddering old man, barely able to walk anymore, and he was accompanied by this absolutely phenomenally beautiful Asian woman. And they asked some commentator, some reporter asked Red Fox, "Where did you find her?" And he said, "I opened my wallet, and there she was." and that's the way it is everywhere. I open my wallet, and there it is. Whatever it is that I'm looking for, I open my wallet, and there it is. And the people that don't have the wallet, the capacity of their wallet, are sitting there left holding the bag, so to speak. So that's my editorial for this show.
Yeah, that's right. Excellent.
I always try to get one in, don't I, John?
Yeah, at a minimum. Hey, what? John, how about another song?
I was just going to suggest that we're getting way too...
I do have an erudite,
that's what we are.
Erudite.
I do have a song that's kind of along the lines of...
Oh, excellent.
Just a moment ago, Buffalo Road, Susanna cried to me with a banjo on her knee. Moses drove Underground Railroad with a precious cargo, singing, "Let my people go." Just a moment ago, it was cotton and coal. Miners rushed gold and preachers pushed soul. Big Tent Revival and Uncle Sam dancing with Susanna down in Alabama. Whistling Dixie down to blow your horn. Playing taps for the natives when the baby was born. America loved you, but you broke my heart. Just a moment ago, Old Glory glowed. Lady Liberty was the keeper of the brave and the free. But then she sold her soul down at the corporate crossroads. And now the whole world knows the devil is a CEO. Just a moment ago, Marilyn Monroe, Joe DiMaggio, old Jim Crow, Ronald McDonald choked on burgers and fries, Mickey Mouse committed mouse aside, Whistle and Dixie down to blow your horn, playing taps for the natives when the baby was born. America loved you, but you broke my heart. This land is your land, this land is my land. California to the New York Island, and in the shadows of her steeple, I've seen the long line of my starving people, and I sat and I wondered. And a voice like thunder said, "Was this land really made for you and me?" Just a moment ago, Buffalo Road, Susanna cried to me with a banjo on me.
Yeah.
Very nice. Excellent.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
See, John, I'm kind of interested in a couple of things. And one is this. Let's just jump right to the jugular, see what kind of blood we can get flowing on this.
Whoa.
Yeah. And as we shared, and of course, as I know very well, you're raised in the church, have a lot of church experience. And right now, today, if you were able to say anything at all to the church in America and know that they were listening and would take you seriously, what would you say?
I would say this.
Pete's writing it down.
I would say if America is claiming to be a Christian nation, and the churches are claiming to be Christian churches, we either have to protect, clothe, advocate, feed, uplift the poor, because that's what Jesus commanded us to do. Or we have to admit that we know that that's what he commanded us to do, but we just really don't feel like it. So, and I think that's, you know, that's one of the most remarkable things about America, isn't it? Is that we have so many rights, and you know, we even have the right to not care.
Yeah.
Like, we even have the right to, like, justify our consumerism, justify our insular lifestyles, justify our separation from the rich and the poor, justify our prejudices. You know, we can do it all day, and we have the right to. In fact, we don't even have to do anything good for anybody else at all if we don't want to.
Right.
So I would say, yeah, to the churches, maybe we, maybe it's time for us to either start acting like Jesus did toward the poor, or maybe we should just, you know, be honest and come out and admit that we just really don't feel like doing what he said we should do.
Yeah. So it's another way of saying it, if I'm catching it, is what is God telling you, and what are you going to do about it? Is the two basic questions. And if you realize God's telling you, you're a sign of hope and provision to those who are without.
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm saying that you don't have to wait to hear what God has to say about that, because he already said it to you.
Right.
You know, you don't have to, like, wait for the prophetic word on Sunday morning. You don't have to wait for the sky to open. You don't have to wait for the still small voice to tell you that, you know, I mean, there was a time when the Christian church stood up to Caesar in Caesar's house,
right,
and refused to fight war. You know, there was a time when people held everything in common. There was a time when, you know, when it was actually something that leveled the playing field between rich and poor. You know, I don't know. I think there's always been two tiers of the Christian church. There's always been the church of the oppressor and the church of the oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could say one thing to the church in America, I would say, you better be really careful which church you belong to.
What I was writing down was something that I said before when we had one of the guests, and it was the gentleman that has the grandson who's autistic.
Oh, yeah, Robert Koff.
Sure. And was talking about what you're doing and so on and so forth, and about the church serving people.
Yes.
Okay. And at the time I said, put your money where your mouth is. That's what I wrote down. As far as the answer to his question, I'm writing down, put your money where your mouth is. It's still certainly some way or shape or form has something to do with what you were just saying so well.
Yeah, that's really how we vote, isn't it, with our dollar bills?
That's right. So if the church is really truly going to serve all the people that they say they're going to serve, then why aren't they going ahead and doing it and putting their money where their mouth is? Now, their money may not be currency. It may be their practice.
Sure.
But whatever their... whatever their measurement is for the success of a church, whether it's size of the congregation, whether it's number of dollars in the offering plate or whether it's what they do in society. Put it where if you're gonna pay it lip service, you better do more than just pay it lip service. You better go ahead and do it. Is kind of where I am on that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that really dovetails with what you're saying, but there may be an element of that there.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd just throw that in. That's three today, John.
That's right. Records are being broken.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to hear another song.
That'd be great.
Okay.
And I refer to it as your Johnny Cash song.
You want to hear that?
Would you? If you don't mind, I like that song. Introduce it for us and let us know exactly what because I know it's not Johnny Cash song, but it certainly references Johnny Cash.
This song's called Johnny Cash on the Radio.
Ah, okay, that's what it was.
Half a mile from Memphis, where my engine froze. Mama says there'll be days like this, the boys on Beale Street know. Baby wants that a wedding ring. All I got is a wandering and a white line running down the middle of a long black road. And a country music station playing Johnny Cash on the radio. America, your ghost is showing in your Dust Bowl dust. Graveyard streets down in Tennessee, screaming in God we trust. Strip malls here are the new cathedrals. Dollar signs, the mark of the devil. Seen it in your eyes from ghost down to ravage. And a country music station playing Johnny Cash on the radio.
On a church door lie, but ain't nobody home. Thank God that country station still plays Johnny Cash on the radio. Don't you cry for me, don't you weep. Cried enough for a willow tree with the Cherokee. Let my burden be my own, Silver City. Call me home, and on the gravestone, darling, don't you lay down a single rose. Just let that country station play there, Johnny Cash on the radio. Let that country station play song, Johnny Cash on the radio. Let that country station play that Johnny Cash on radio. Uh-huh. Let the country station play that Johnny Cash on the radio.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, excellent.
I like that song.
Yeah.
I like that line about the Bible Belt being broken.
Right.
That was good. That was good.
Yeah, very good.
Well, how much longer do you want to stay and sing?
a little longer, I guess.
No
more theological questions.
I'm pointing at
all right.
I'm pointing to his father.
I might say something I have to live up to.
Right. Now, I guess I'm still amazed, not only at your talent, your voice, and so on and so forth, but that the fact that you have no formal voice training, no formal training. Is that an accurate statement? I mean, as far as going out and taking lessons and having a voice coach and all the rest that you hear people do.
I've had some. Usually right before I'm ready to make a studio recording, I'll consult a voice coach.
Okay.
Because, you know, you slip into bad habits and vocally, I know how to sing properly, but I really don't.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know what properly is. So, when you say properly, are you referring to something so it is not as tough on your vocal cords?
Sure,
is that what you're saying by properly?
More breathing more properly, breathing from your diaphragm, projecting from your your palate.
Mm-hmm. Nasal passages and all through there. Okay.
Difference between like singing from your gut,
mm-hmm.
or singing from your throat.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten sloppy with that. You know. But.
Well, let me ask you this: is some of that having to do with the environment that you're singing in, to compensate for whatever else is going on around in that environment?
I don't think so.
No?
I think it just has to do with, you know, being lazy.
I wasn't going to go there. I was giving you an out, John. You know, it's sort of like that driver's education. Always leave yourself an out, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know where this is coming from today, John.
well, you have a platform for your true voice.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Absolutely. When you're out performing, do you perform generally or all the time as a solo act, or do you have any kind of other orchestration or backup singers or anything that work with you?
Oftentimes I do, yeah. I've played with the same band in Philadelphia for about 10 years,
mm-hmm.
7 to 10 years, depending on the player. And then I got a band in Nashville, great band. In Nashville, I play with Kenny Vaughn, who is just a brilliant guy, great, great guitar player. He's plays with Marty Stewart and Lucinda Williams and people like that. Then Dave Rowe on bass. Oftentimes, he plays bass with me, and he was Johnny's bass player all through the 80s and 90s.
All right.
And then also play with Ken Coomer, who was in a band called Wilco. And just great musicians, you know, kind of seasoned, and you know, they know their way around music. Then, of course, I'm excited because next week I go to Europe, and I've got a new band from Zurich, three Swiss guys, bass, drums, guitar, and they're learning my stuff, and we'll have a quick rehearsal when I get there, and then play a show.
How much travel do you do? A fair amount, I would imagine, huh?
All the time.
Always on the road?
Yeah.
How much time do you spend in Europe over the course of a year? What percentage would you guess?
Last year, not as much as the year before. 2010, I spent about half my time there.
Really?
But last year, I was in Europe maybe 2 months, 3 months total.
Mm-hmm. So you don't you're a single guy, no family. So you can go at the whim, at the drop of a hat, and somebody says, "I got a great gig for you," and you say, "Packing up my guitar and off I go."
Yep, that's right.
Isn't that great?
It is great. Yeah.
Man, what a life. Huh? I'm sure it's got its drawbacks, but I'm just, you know, to think that at what, 35 or whatever it is, that you can. You're established enough that people are going to give you offers to travel and go here and go there. Now, do you, when you do something like that, just from a business standpoint, excuse me, if they say, okay, we want you to come to Zurich and do this thing in Zurich, what typically is included in that? I mean, you get your hotels, you get your meals, you get your plane fare, and you get a fee for your service.
Not plane fare.
No.
But, you know, generally speaking, in Europe, it's kind of common. It's pretty much part of the, you know, culture to give you a hotel room and a meal and, you know, and then pay you,
for your services, for your playing.
Yeah.
Okay. How is it different between Europe than it is in the States?
Oh, well, most people in the States feel like they're doing you a big favor if they give you a show. And
follow the money trail.
Yeah. You know, it's, I think in the States, it's like, it's just, we're really oversaturated with, you know, guy with guitar or cover band or, you know, it's a whole different culture. I think exactly what you just said, follow the money trail. I think American culture has commodified music to a ridiculous degree where it's no longer about the story or the song, you know. It's about something else.
It's about the performance and the draw.
Yeah, it's about tickets and selling beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever.
It's Deborah and I, but Deborah certainly much, much more than I was involved in a concert series in Oceanside, California many years ago. I have to think about how many years ago it was. But anyhow, there was a situation where the Department of Recreation, I think, in Oceanside, California, wanted to put together a concert series at a band shell that was right on the beach. Nice venue, a nice place to play. And they saw it as an opportunity to get some of these, I'm going to call them old-time groups, Temptations, Four Tops, Lou Rawls, Melissa Manchester, some of those people that have been around for a while and that were playing Indian casinos now.
Yeah, yeah.
And as they swing through, they try to grab them up on a night midweek, and they put them on this band shell, and they would perform. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. I mean, it was just a great deal. I mean, we saw the Oak Ridge Boys there and a whole bunch of people. But they had these proclivities, and that is, they only wanted to have yellow M&Ms in the M&M candy, and they wanted to have a sandwich with only one slice of pickle on it. Is that kind of stuff still going on out there? Do you know?
I mean, I hope you're exaggerating about the one slice of pickle or the...
No, I'm not.
You're not?
I am not.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know much about that stuff. So.
I was just wondering if you had heard any of those stories, because they would come in, they would be pulled into their limousine, the limousine would drop them off at the door where they were going to go into what the setup is, their dressing room, and so on and so forth.
Right.
And they went in there looking for a certain brand of bottled water to have only yellow M&Ms, no peanut M&Ms, just plain yellow M&Ms. That means that people had to go through and start opening bags of M&Ms. it was incredible stories that we heard, and it got to the point that after they did their 10 years, they said, "We're done. We're done with it now."
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, it gotten to be pretty much old hat after 10 years, because nobody else wanted to get involved in the project, and the ones that were there said, "We're burnt.
Mm-hmm.
We're burnt out." And I find it interesting that. And that's what I find so refreshing about you. You're sitting here, we're talking, having a good time. You're playing a few tunes, and we're enjoying them. And I just think that there are too many other people that are out there just for their own self-aggrandizement and, you know, whatever they can get from the promoter, because maybe that's the way the promoters have actually treated them along the way, too, that they're going to say, okay, if that's the case, if this isn't in my contract, I don't sign it.
Yeah, right.
I mean, so I think that maybe it goes both ways.
I was wondering where my M&Ms are, though.
Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe there. I think there's in the building next door. I think they've got a Tootsie Roll pop. Well, that wouldn't do.
They might. Depends what was donated over there. Right?
Exactly.
Hey, how about one more song?
Okay. Are we getting close to wrap up time?
Yeah.
We're. You know, this is the nice thing about doing this thing on Blog Talk. It's an hour show, but I set it up for 90 minutes just for events just like this.
That's
so
right.
So we can go, we got time left, so whatever you'd like to do.
I'll sing this song called Who, which is the song that Dad was telling about the Socially Conscious Award. Coincidentally, next year I'm going to try for a category that's got more competition in it than this one. Not much competition in this socially conscious category.
Well, if things keep going the way they are, that may be a very well-packed category before too long.
This is called Who. Heartland, we took the wild out of wild New Yonder, we took the middle out of middle class, and we took the Indians out of the summer. And who took the clues away from the rebels? Who took the peace out of the past? Who took the candy away from the babies? Who made a living off of taking our lives? Was it everyone who's looking the other way? And who took the muse away from musicians? Who took the apple out of American pie? Who took the moss off the stone that's a rolling? Who took the equal out of equal rights? Who took the power out of power to the people? Who took the sting out of Cassius Clay? Who took the difference between good and evil? Who took United from the U.S.A.? Oh, ooh, was it you or was it me? I can't say, was it everyone who looking the other way? And who took the rest away from the weary? Who took the beating? Who took the fall? Who took the buffalo off of the prairie? Who took the justice out of justice for all? And who took the quest out of asking the question? Took your vision while you're watching HD. We took ulteriors and put them in the motives. We took the human from humanity. We took the human from humanity. Oh, ooh, was it you or was it me? I can't say. Was it everyone who's looking the other way?
Very good.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Now, that's your award winner.
Yeah.
And it was in the Socially Conscious
Yeah, it was from ASCAP, which is the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers.
Uh-huh.
It's an award called the J. Gorney Socially Conscious Lyricist of the Year.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. I really have enjoyed having you here.
Thank you, Pete.
Believe me, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the conversation, and I certainly enjoyed the music.
Thank you.
And I have too, John.
When was the last time you guys saw each other?
Christmas.
So how often do you have a chance to see each other during the course of any year? A couple, two, three?
Two or three times, yeah. Last year was a little extra. We spent 10 days together in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
I joined John in the middle of his tour of Ireland.
Do you guys ever sing together anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you sing in front of a group or you just sing together in the house?
If John invites me.
We don't have any... We don't really have any numbers worked out, necessarily.
No, we don't, not at this point. Yeah.
Well, I would really like to be present when Fossil Fuel is playing and you're singing with them and playing with them.
That'd be cool, man.
I'd almost pay money to hear that. But I know that I think I can get a backstage pass.
There you go.
That's right. If there is a stage.
Maybe I could carry one of the speakers or something.
Sure.
This has been really fun, Pete.
Yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed it because I certainly did as well.
It's my privilege, man.
And John, thanks for bringing him over.
Absolutely, Pete.
You're the man.
Looking forward to it.
You're the man. And I tell you, if you're back when you're back in town, we're still doing this show. We'd love to have you come back.
All right.
Absolutely, would love to have you come back.
That's possibly May.
Wonderful.
It remains to be seen.
It's more of a possibility than some other times.
Well, everybody's been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show, Exploring Faith Edition here on Blog Talk Radio, and we want to make sure that they all know that. And John Francis has been our guest, songwriter and performer. John, before I would be remiss before I close this off. How can people get hold of you? How can they find your stuff? How can they buy your stuff? Whatever it is.
Yeah, go to johnfrancismusic.com. It's JohnFrancis music.com. And there you can buy songs on iTunes. You can download some free MP3s. You can see my tour dates and all that kind of stuff. Or you can go to iTunes and do a search for my name and My records will come up there as well.
And it's all there.
Yeah.
Are you on MySpace or any of those types of things as well?
I am. Yeah. You can link to my website to all those kind of things.
Okay. So all the contacts are there and the connections. John Francis FRANCIS.com.
Music.
I'm sorry. John Francis music.com. Well, great. I'm glad I thought of getting that in before I wrapped this thing up and we went off air.
And Saturday, February 4th, this coming Saturday,
yes.
3 p.m. at Marley Park.
Marley Park, okay.
The Backyard Concert Series.
Very good,
yeah.
Very good. Is there an admission for that?
Yes.
Okay, how much is that?
$10.
$10 to get in?
Right.
It's a ticket well worth the price to listen to this man sing.
Absolutely.
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 There's no doubt about it.
Is it a two-for-one ticket?
It's a two-for-one ticket, that's right. So you can bring Deborah.
I can bring Deborah. There we go. I would love to be able to get out there. It depends on what time my daughter is picking up the grandkids.
Sure.
We have the grandkids Friday night. Well, I'd like to bring the grandkids too, but they're a little tiny. This has been the Boomer the Babe Show, I said. And this is Exploring Faith Edition on Wednesday, the first and third Wednesdays of every month with Pastor John Mayer and his son, John Francis. And we can listen to us again later this week. We'll have our next show this week will be on Friday and at the normal time, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning, Arizona time. Next week, we have starting a whole month of new shows, brand new shows, starting on Monday. Monday through Friday, we'll be on every day with ourselves as well as some of our show hosts and so on. And don't forget to come back in 3 weeks, two more Wednesdays away for Another interesting conversation with whoever John Mayer brings in for another
Great.
Exploring Faith.
Great.
Remember, we do much more than host this radio show on Blog Talk. Check us out at BoomerandTheBabe.com. See everything else that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And listen to this show again, folks. It's great music and certainly great conversation. Have a great day, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Listening to the Boomer and the Babe show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerandthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.